So we have the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. We've been talking about it. And I apologize for this light. That's probably going to be annoying for a lot of people. But you can notice, maybe you can take bets on how many times I'm going to let the light behind my head shine. But we talked last week about this Gemara in Kiddushin. Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. And this Gemara, first I have to say thank you to Steve Lorch. Steve Lorch sponsored today's class. He did so in memory of his mother, whose yahrzeit was earlier today. It's already the next day, halachically, but the yahrzeit was today. Her name was Rezel Bas Tzvi, Rose Lorch. Mitzvah Hashem, our learning should be Lo'ilu Nishmasat, for the elevation of her soul. So thank you, Steve. He's not here, but he is wanted to sponsor on the day of the yahrzeit, so he did so. And I think he's told me before that, you know, if Harriet was still alive, she'd love all these classes. So the women's classes, she was always very religious attendant of. So that's why I think he also likes to sponsor the women's classes. So thank you, Steve, for the sponsorship. And Mirz Hashem, our learning should be an elevation for our soul. Okay. We talked about this Gemara. The Gemara said in source number one, Ezehu Mora ve'ezehu Kibud. What is fearing and what is kavod? And we had said Mora to fear means lo omid bimkomo, v'lo yoshe bimkomo. Don't stand in his place or her place, and don't sit in his or her place. V'lo soser es devarif, and do not contradict his words. V'lo machrio. We discussed what exactly machrio meant last week. In the end of the day, it might mean to not imply that there's a weighing, there's some kind of balancing of his opinion versus other people's. That you should always agree, or you should always give the appearance of agreement with your parent, and not to even think, not even to express that you thought about it, that maybe somebody else's opinion was right. Kibud, and what is kibud? What does it mean to honor? Machil, mashke, malbish, mechase, machnis, umotzi. All very physical, tangible activities, right? To feed, to give drink, to clothe, to cover, to bring them in, to bring them out. All the different tangible needs. And we had talked about last week the different possibilities of the distinctions, the categorization that the Gemara is trying to get at when it says these phrases. We talked about the Maharal. And source number two explains that really it's not about necessarily that these activities are the only activities of Mora, or these activities are the only activities of Kibud, but really what it means is, what are the activities that are exclusively one or the other? Meaning that if they weren't different, if they didn't have any practical manifestations that could stand on their own, so then they'd be the same mitzvah. You know, it is interesting. I was talking about this on Shabbos a little bit, about respecting older siblings. We were talking about Yaakov and Esav, and did Yaakov have to be respectful to Esav? There's an interesting machlokas about whether or not you have to respect your older brother. Well, the Gemara says that explicitly. The question is, in what conditions, and you know, what is the behavior of the older brother have to be to fulfill that? And it's darshan from Kibud Av V'Em. What's interesting, some of the Mepharshim talk about there, that just like Kibud Av V'Em is one mitzvah, right? The mitzvah to honor your parent, is there's not a mitzvah of honoring your father and a mitzvah of honoring your mother. There's a mitzvah to honor a parent. So too, there's a mitzvah of honoring an older sibling that's included in it. It's the same mitzvah. You get a fulfillment of Kibud Av V'Em when you honor your older sibling. But that's not our topic for today. Maybe we can talk about it a different time. But it is darshan from the Kibud Av V'Em. Very interesting stuff, but not for now. The flip side of that is, while it's true there's no separate mitzvah for Kibud Av and Kibud Aim, there is a separate mitzvah, at least according to the Rambam, of Mora and Kibud. right? So you don't split up the mitzvah for separate people, but you split up the mitzvah for separate categories. So the Gor Aryeh says, if these are really separate categories, so then show me the time where one applies and the other one doesn't. Because if there were no instances of one applying and the other one not applying, so then it would never be the case that they'd be two separate mitzvahs, right? Even though there are times where Rashi says explicitly on the Torah that the Torah gives us an extra mitzvah to sort of emphasize a certain idea. But halachically, we don't really paskin like that. We paskin that if the discussion or the description in the Torah is exactly the same as another mitzvah, that's counted as the same mitzvah. That could be our Rambam aligned thinking, but that's how the Rambam explains the counting of mitzvos, and that's also implied by a lot of Gemaras that we've already seen. But that's what the Gor Aryeh says. The Gor Aryeh says this Gemara is not defining Mora versus Kibud. It's just giving us examples of when the one will apply and one will not apply. And that really sort of flies in the face of what we were trying to do last week, which is trying to give a category. What is the definition or the description of the mitzvah of Mora versus the mitzvah of Kibud? And one of the simplest ones, one of the more probably the most conventional wisdom is that Mora means things you don't do. Right, you have to refrain from doing them, just like Yiras Hashem is to fulfill or to avoid the los ases of life. So too, Yiras Avavaim is to not do certain things with your parents. And on the flip side, you can see in the Gemara's cases that everything in the kibbutz category is very active, is very tangible. We had said that there may be another possibility. Another possibility, just to sort of finish off our summary from last week, another possibility was that maybe Mora Avaim has to do with the reputation of a parent. That all of these things are in some ways a degrading, or was that the word we used? Denigrating? I don't remember. A degrading of the parent's status. You're sitting in their prominent place, which is how the Rashi explains it in source number 4 we saw last week. You are, going against them, you're implying that they could be wrong. So all of those are the effect, negative effect towards your parents' reputation. Whereas the mitzvos of kibud are not really as much about a person's status, but actual tangible assistance. So those were the two distinctions that we had made. The question that some of the Rishonim deal with, who don't postulate the Maharal, right? The Maharal says that this Gemara is a very specific thing. It's talking about cases that are independent of each other. But the Rambam says, or other Rishonim ask the question implicitly, what is the Gemara doing? Is the Gemara really giving us categories? Or is it giving us specific kinds of activities? Meaning these are activities and nothing else. You'd have to justify any situation, meaning like this. This is not necessarily easy halachic concept to understand. But imagine for a second that you would have to answer, does this activity fall within kibud avaim, right? So if this Gemara is giving us categories and these are just examples of activities, so then you can say whether it falls within this category or that category, and the two categories are mostly, mutually exclusive, not according to the Maharal, right? Is it a positive thing to do or is it a negative thing to do? Or is it a reputational thing or is it a tangible thing, right? Those are easy ways that you can fit in, certain activities if you'd be asked if this is activity of kibud avaim. However, you could also say this is not a category as much as it is specifics. These are the specific activities that are themselves defining kibud avaim or mora avaim. And if that were to be the case, so then when someone would ask you, does this fall within kibud avaim, you'd have to go back to this Gemara and look through whether or not something is within one of these categories. So for instance, when the Gemara says, lo soser es devarav, don't contradict his words, so what does contradict mean? What does disagreeing mean? Maybe doing an activity which is against their wishes would be within the specific, heading of soser devarav, of disagreeing. If, however, you'd have an activity that's not any of these activities, so then it wouldn't be within kibud avaim or avaim. So this is one of the implicit questions, and I'm not familiar with anyone who does take it literally. But if we look at the Rambam, you'll see that he quotes almost verbatim this Gemara. which would almost imply that maybe the Rambam looks at this Gemara in a literal sense, that the mitzvah of Kibbud Av Em has to be specific to those activities. But as we'll see, it's not exactly the case. So the Rambam says in source number 3, for those who have the sheets, Ezehu Mora, the Ezehu Kavod. Same exact question as the Gemara. Mora, what is Mora? Lo Obe Bimkomo, Velo Yoshe Bimkomo. Same thing. Lo Soser Estevarav, Velo Machri Estevarav. Don't contradict and don't weigh the opinion. Velo Yikra Lo Bishmo. Wait a second. That's not in the list. Lo Yikra Lo Bishmo. So the truth is, there's another Gemara that talks about that. There's a Gemara that talks about that. Or at least implies that. It doesn't say it explicitly. I think the Gemara, if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara is talking about if somebody is reading from the Torah and their father's name comes up, are they allowed to translate the name even though it's their father's name? And it says that you'd be allowed to. But it doesn't explicitly say that you wouldn't be allowed to otherwise. Which is just the implication of that Gemara. So the Rambam includes that Gemara in here. But that's another specific instance. A specific instance of the Gemara giving us a behavior that's no good in terms of Mora. So this halacha, we'll see in a second, is not 100% clear where the Rambam, or what the Rambam is referring to. We'll talk about it soon. But that is an added category from the Rambam. You can't say, yeah, Bacha, what did you want to say?
I was going to ask if it's a specific prohibition, like you were discussing, what if you come across your parents' name, your lady from the Torah? What about, is this even after they've died, not during his lifetime, not after he's passed? What if you name your child in the honor of your father? Can't you ever say your child's name?
It's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question. And what we'll see is that there are qualifiers to this Rambam. This is not taken as at face value. So, for instance, this honestly comes up more in terms of Kabbalah than it comes up in practical halacha. Because, I mean, it's practical. Obviously, you can't call your parent by their name. And every kid goes through that stage when they're like 2 years old and they find out their parent's name. You know, that stage. It's a fun stage. You have to, like, deprogram them. But either way, it's happened with all three. We're 3 for 3 on that stage. What's interesting is that it happens to be relevant when you get into shidduchim. This is kind of a quirky thing, but there is a halacha. I think it's from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the Sefer HaChassidim, which is somewhat of a Kabbalistic Sefer. And he says that if you were to marry someone whose father is your name, so you cause a problem for that person. Your spouse is now going to talk, is going to say your name, but that's their parent's name. They can't say their parent's name. This is Kabbalah. This is not necessarily like the Rambam is saying here, even though we do pass that a parent in law has the same status in terms of Kibbud Av Em. But there are interesting instances in rabbinic history. The Sfas Emes changed his name when he got married. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the Sfas Emes' name was Yehuda Leib, and that was his father-in-law's name. So when he got married, he changed it to Yehuda Arye Leib. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's true. My wife's, Ricky's cousin, married a girl named Laurie, and Ricky's aunt's name is Laurie. Of all names, like Laurie and Laurie. So the truth is that there's a distinction. We might see it tonight. I'm not sure where I saw this. It might be in the later sources tonight. There's a distinction between common names and uncommon names. So for instance, when it comes, if your in-law's name is Moshe, so like, that's a common name. You're clearly not calling your parent Moshe. When you say the name Moshe, you could be talking about tons of people. But if your spouse's name is Laurie, and your mother-in-law's name is going to be Laurie, so then that's a little bit of a, or your mother's name is Laurie, so that's a very uncommon, specific name. They asked a Shiloh about it, and apparently it was okay, because again, it's not a literal, thing. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Svardim have a whole different type of... Sarita asks, would there be a difference between Ashkenazim and Svardim in regards to naming? Svardim have a very different playbook. Fathers name their own sons their own name, which is highly discouraged in Ashkenazi communities. When I named Usher, I asked Shiloh about it because my brother's middle name is Usher, and his second name is Gedalia, and Ricky's brother's middle name is Gedalia. So we asked Shiloh for both. We actually asked another Shiloh because, whatever, we had another name in mind, but there was a relative who had that name, and we didn't choose it. Either way, so this is a very halacha lemaisa. It's halacha lemaisa, but not in the ways that the Rambam presents it. That's all. That's what I'll say. Ella, Omer, what should you say instead? Abba Mari, my father. This is an interesting one. When I was younger, I know I'm still young, but when I was even younger than I am now, so I was a gabbai for our shul's youth minion. And there was one person every time, and I never understood why he was doing it until later when I learned this halacha. He would always, when I asked him what his name was, to call him up for an aliyah. So he would always say, so-and-so Ben, Abba Murray so-and-so. And I'm like, that's not his name. Like, why are you telling me that? That's not his name. And then I realized he was probably being machmer for this Rambam. Because every time you say your father's name, you shouldn't just say your father's name. You should say Abba Murray and then their name. To give respect as an introduction to their name. I'm not sure if that's really the halacha, but that's what he would always do. Either way, so what is the case? Harei haya shem aviv o shem rabo kishem acherim. If your father's name or your Rebbe's name was like somebody else's name, so mishana es shemam. So you should change their name. Presumably this is referring to the other person that you know. Right? So if you've got a friend named Moshe and you're Sephardim have, Sarita's asking good questions today. Sephardim do take into account Kabbalah. This is a very specific Kabbalistically infused Sefer called the Sefer HaChasidim, which came out of Ashkenazic communities. So it wasn't just Kabbalah, but it was a specific Ashkenazi rabbi who thought in those terms. But either way, So if you have a friend named Moshe and your Rebbe's name is Moshe or your father's name is Moshe, so you go to Moshe and you say, hey, look, I can't call you Moshe. That's my dad's name. Can I call you Mo? Can I call you Moses? Can I call you something else? Can I call you a nickname? That's presumably what the Rambam would say that you should do, although it's not clear what exactly one would have to do. The Rambam then himself says, Yera Eli, or Yera Eli, She'ein nizhar b'kach, ela b'shem shu pela. Oh, this is the Rambam himself says it. I knew I saw it somewhere. You don't have to do this unless it's a name shehu pela. Anyone know the word pela? Like nifla'ot. A wondrous name. Yeah, a wondrous name, an uncommon, specific, unique name. An unbelievable name. Specific name. She'ein hakol dashin bo. Interesting word, dash. Dash means to thresh. It's not a word that most people use all the time. We have that phrase last week in our Tuesday class. We talked about the word Ekev by the Parsha Ekev. Haya Ekev Tishmun. Right? Rashi says over there in Parsha's Ekev that Hakol Dashin Bo. Everyone threshes on it. Right? The Ekev, the heel, is something that everyone tramples on. So here too, says the Rambam, it's something that people just use over, they wear it out. If it's a name that everyone says so often, so then you don't have to be concerned about saying that name, because it's not really clear that you ever could be referring to your parent. Aval Hashemos Shekorim Behen Esa'am Kegon Avram Yitzhak B'Yakov Moshe V'Chayotze Behen B'Chol Lashon V'Chol Zman Kori Behen L'Acherim Shelo B'Fanav. You can talk to your friend if they have those common names. So not Moshe. Moshe was a bad example. You can talk to them in those ways. Shelo B'Fanav V'Ein B'Kach Klum, and there's no problem. However, the implication is that if you have that friend over your house and your father's around, so then you shouldn't call him. You shouldn't call your friend by his name, because that could be interpreted to be a reference to your parent, and that is not a good look. So interesting situation from the Rambam, which is not in the Gemara. The Gemara does not discuss that, I don't believe. We'll see. I think we'll see in a second some commentary on this. But says the Rambam, continuing, so that's Mora. Ezehu kavod, what's considered honor, like the Gemara says, Machil, Mashke, Mabish, Mechasa, Mishel Ha'av. This gets into a whole thing. This the next Gemara, right? Source number one, the very next Gemara is in reference to who's got to pay up. I don't know if I've told this story before, but the story goes, well, first of all, the Gemara says, as we'll probably learn inside, that the kibud and mora that you do, that any finances you have to pay for the sake of kibud avaim comes out of your parents' pocket, right? It comes out of your parents' pocket. The child has to do the activity, has to do the hard work, but he doesn't have to pay for it. This is a very interesting, complicated halacha many times. But this is how I used to paskin when, you know, not really paskin, but this is how I used to act when I was younger. Ricky and I would get gifts for our parents, and we'd say, hey, we got you this. You paid for it on your credit card. I hope you like it. So, when you have to do halachically, that's the halacha. Halachically, kibud av aim is from the parents' pocket. There's a story that they say from, I believe it's the Brisker Rav. A student came to the Brisker Rav and he said, my dad wants me to come home, I don't know, for break, to come see him. So I said, okay. So I said to my father, this is what he's saying to the Brisker Rav. He said, the halacha is that the parent has to pay for kibud avim. So if my father wants me to come home, so my father has to send me money. He has to give me the money for the train ticket. So he came to the Brisker Rav and said, look, I need you to paskin. My father's adamant that I come home, but he's not giving me the money, so presumably I don't have to go. So the Brisker Rav said back to him, it's not true. You can walk. That's what the Brisker Rav said. Because you have to figure out, what does it mean that you can't do it? Can you really not do it without your parents' money? So according to that, unclear if that was part of the psak, or he was sort of like giving over sort of like the spirit of the halacha, like don't be such a nudnik. But it is interesting to define what is the definition of whose pocket it's coming out of. I gave over a case, and we can do this case inside, a very, very sad case. I gave over this case, or I mentioned this case on Shabbos. Happened a few years ago that somebody's father passed away, who he wasn't close with, and after the war, they became separated, and the father remarried a non-Jewish woman, and they lived like in South Africa or something, and just so happens to be that they had another child. So they have a non-Jewish child, and he's the Jewish child from the first marriage from before the war. And lo and behold, the father passed away. Someone found this son and told him that the father passed away. And the son said, okay, we have to make sure he has a Jewish burial. He was a Jewish person. He wasn't a religious person. So he goes and he tries to figure out the burial plans. And the non-Jewish son says, no, we've got it all taken care of. We're going to cremate him. So, he's going to cremate the son, he's going to cremate the father. So the Jewish son is now in a bind because the other son is closer to the father. And this son is estranged from the father. But he has an obligation as his son to take care of the burial properly. To make matters much more complicated, this father was not just any random guy. He had an inheritance of $50 million. And the will stated that it was going to be split evenly between his two sons, which is interesting unto itself, why it would be even when the other son doesn't even know him. But $25 million to each son. And they go to court over this case. And in the end of the day, the court ruled in favor of the non-Jewish son, because the non-Jewish son was closer to the father. He has to choose what the father was going to happen to the father. Obviously, the son has halacha to deal with, and he can't necessarily listen to the court. So he begs and he pleads with the non-Jewish son, please let me do it. And what does the son say? What does the non-Jewish son say to the Jewish son? If you want to bury our father in a Jewish cemetery, so give me your piece of the pie. Give me your $25 million. Put your money where your mouth is. And Reb Zilberstein paskins that Me'ikra Din, he was technically chayev to pay the money. And he paid the money and he buried his father all by himself in a Jewish cemetery, with no one else around, because no one knew him. He didn't even know him. He gave up $25 million to bury his father. Unbelievable story. Maybe we'll get into the case about the backs and forth, but it comes down to this halacha. Kibud Avaim comes from the father's money. So whose money is it? Is it the father's money or is it his money? The father already died. The money was already transferred. So where does that fall within this distinction? So this halacha is not as simple as it sounds. It's not just using your parents' credit card. You have to define whose money is it, and different situations call for different outcomes. That's an unbelievable story. Maybe we can get to it at some point. But either way, so the Rambam continues, V'im ein mamon la'av, v'yesh mamon la'ben, kofen oso v'zan aviv v'im el kifim ashu yachol. And if the father doesn't have any money, but the son has a little bit of money, so the son is forced to pay for whatever kibud is he can with the money that he has. You don't have to go broke, but you do have to do what you can to help your parents, which also could be relevant to that case. Umotzi umachnis umeshamsho b'shar devarim. Oh, wait a second, says the Rambam. You help him in this, you help him in that. Meshamsho, like a shamish. Shamash is a helper. You aid your father. Bishar hadvarim shah shamashim mishamshim behenas harav. With all the different kinds of things that a student might help a Rebbe with. V'omei bipanav kiderach shu omei bibnei rabo. And you stand before your father like you stand before your teacher. Says the Rambam, let me throw in shar devarim. Right? The Rambam quotes almost exactly the Gemara. And then he says, umishamsho bishar hadvarim. And you got to help him out with any other possible thing. So this a couple interesting things here. The Rambam, as you saw in the first category of Mora, he quotes the exact cases of the Gemara, but then he adds that one, that whole little description of not speaking him, not saying his name, which was not in our list, but it was in the Gemara in a different place. So the Rambam only adds that one, and it's because it's in the Gemara. But then when it comes to Kibud, he quotes all the situations of the Gemara, and then he adds this line, "Umishamsho b'shar hadvarim." It's not only the case that you have to do these specific activities, but it's any kind of situation, any kind of help that you can give to a parent. That's your obligation. So while it sounded like the Rambam was postulating that this Gemara is very specific, in the end of the day, the Rambam says, no, it's really general. It's really all-inclusive. The one distinction one may make with this, the one distinction one might make about this, is that maybe the Rambam only thinks that kibud is a general. The Rambam doesn't have the same shar devarim caveat when it comes to mora avaim. The first category of fearing a parent, he doesn't say anything like that. He doesn't say that you have to have everything else in mind about the reputation or about a negative thing to not do to them. He actually gives specific examples, as the Gemara says, and goes out of his way to add another example the Gemara says in another place, as if to say, this is the list and nothing else. But when it comes to kibud, so then he says anything else. Everything else goes. Everything else is included in that. It's a very interesting Rambam, which we'll have to keep in mind. If we look, however, at Rashi, we saw this Rashi actually last week. Let me see again. Yeah. Let's turn over the page to the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah is Rabbi Yosef Cairo. You might know the name Rabbi Yosef Cairo from the Shulchan Aruch and from the Beis Yosef. Before he writes any of that, he writes a commentary on the Rambam himself. They say, I've heard, that the Shulchan Aruch is 75% of the time just the Rambam. Right? Most of the time it's just the Rambam. Right? When it paskins, right, the Rabbi Yosef Cairo says it's in his introduction to the Shulchan Aruch that when I am giving over the Psak Halacha, when you look up a Shulchan Aruch, who's he basing it on? He's basing it on three individuals. The Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush, the three main codifiers of... You don't listen to them, Sarita. There's no exception for that. But the three main... I can't hear you, Sarita, if you're saying something to me. No, okay, I'll call. Can you figure it out?
I just wonder about that. I know you're not supposed to look off the topic, but it happened in my brother-in-law's family because his mother said, I just want to be cremated. So he did. So my brother-in-law did. That's my sister's husband. And then you know, when his father came to die. So he was very confused. His father got a bit demented and he had nowhere to visit. He was really confused that there were ashes in a place. And then my brother-in-law, when it came to it, he cremated his father too.
Yeah.
And,
it's sad.
You know, I just thought the whole thing is terrible. And I keep wondering about what my sister and my brother-in-law would do and what their children will think.
Yeah, that's hard.
Upsets me a lot to think about that. So
we have to do everything in our power.
I mean, the trauma's come up a lot.
Yeah, it does come up. And we have to do everything in our power to prevent that from happening. As we've said before, Kibud Av V'Em does not extend to things that are against the Torah. If your father tells you or your mother tells you to violate Shabbos, so you don't listen to them. So too, if they told you that they want to be cremated, we don't listen to them. Just like we don't listen to them for other things that are wrong. So, we talked about that before. But, it doesn't matter.
It was interesting. The story was interesting before I'd heard that. The one about the field and the brother you told us before.
Yeah.
I heard it from somewhere else. It was also from very interesting ones. That, you know those Panimim on the Torah that used to
Yeah,
come
sure.
out? There was a fascinating story about a man, one woman who was in a nursing home, and the son was the son of the supposed one who was died was informed that his mother died, and she'd come and bury them. And later, he found his mother was alive, and it was someone else they buried. But it happened. It was just by mistake. This child, the person who was buried. But who he thought was his mother had a child who was not interested at all in having a Jewish burial, and because of this mistake, that person did get buried. And it's in one of the Jewishly.
Wow!
It's in one of the old Panimim. I might have saved it. I look it up. A fascinating story.
That is an interesting story.
And so there were two things. So he found his mother was alive.
Yeah.
And because of the mistake, a person
Somebody
who would have been cremated got. Very
Jewishly. Right. And very, very good.
Very nice.
That is
very
nice. So the Kesef Mishnah of Yosef Cairo, he says in his introduction that he bases his opinions on three people, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush, the three main codifiers of the Rishonim. And in the end of the day, he has his own parish already on the Rambam, so he's most familiar with the Rambam. And in the end of the day, when he writes the Shulchan Aruch, he sides with the Rambam almost all the time. But he says that's not, he says in the Shulchan Aruch, it's not necessarily because of the Rambam, but it's really because he quotes the majority of the three of them, and the Rambam was the most extensive codifier of the three, so the Rambam always has something to say. Either way, so the Kesef Mishnah says, in his super commentary to the Rambam, he says here in source number 5, if you have it, Tanur Rabbanan, Ezu Morav, Ezu Kavod, Morav, Lo Yomud B'Kavod, Lo Yoshim B'Kavod, Lo Soser Tzavav, Lo Machrio, Uperish Rashi. So now he's quoting Rashi's opinion. What does it mean? Lo omei bimkomo b'makom hamiyuchad la'aviv la'amod sham besod zakenim. Im chaver, as we defined last week, this is really a halacha which is all about the reputation of the father. To denigrate or to deplatform your father in some way. To say that he's not as great as he is. So if you're going to sit in his chair, and the chair is the chair, or the place is the place that he used to be with other people, and he used to have a certain position of power, of status. So that would be a denigration of his reputation.
If your father and somebody else is agreeing,
you shouldn't say that I believe in so-and-so. Right, this that you shouldn't disagree with the Rambam, but that wouldn't make sense because the Rabbeinu Yeruchim Kasav b'shem Harama to lo yeshev afilu b'makom hamiyuchel lo leishev bebeso. That he disagrees with both opinions in Rashi that when it comes to his place, it doesn't mean his place in the Moshav Zakenim. It doesn't mean his place in the city square or in, you know, where he would sit with the other elders. What it means is even in the house, right? And this is the halacha that this is the, you know, this is the day school halacha where you always hear that you can't sit in your father's chair, you can't sit in your mother's chair, even at the dining room table. I was speaking to a Rav recently who often eats with his mother because she's a widow. and he goes over to make sure that she's eating with somebody and she feels, you know, camaraderie or whatever. And the Rav was always, is still till this day, is makbid to not sit in his mother, in his father's chair. Right? He doesn't sit in the father's chair out of kavod to his father. Whether or not you'd have to do that after the father passes is an interesting question, but the mother is always adamant that she wants somebody to sit there, and he's always refuses and says no. Interesting, interesting sugya there. But this applies according to Rabbeinu Yerucham. It applies even for one's own normal chair. If this is where your father always sits, so then that is a chair you're not allowed to sit in. Doesn't matter if it's against your reputation. Which means that our Gemara is redefined. It's not explicitly or exclusively about any kind of denigrating of the reputation, as much as it is things that are, you know, not nice. Yeah, they're just not nice to your father, to your mother too. Begama Masha Perish Rashi says the Kesemishin. Also, in addition, what Rashi says by the words V'lo Machrio, Hiksha Harama. If the whole definition of lo machrio is to not side with the other person who disagrees with your father, so that's the same thing as sosar devarav. That's the same thing as contradicting your father. How is disagreeing with him by applying by subscribing to somebody else's opinion any different from from actually disagreeing with him in the first place? Ella says the Rama. Afilu nirin lo divrei aviv. Even to say, we talked about this last week, even to say, I agree with my father. Einu yachol lomar. Right? You're not allowed to say that. Nirin li divrei abba. Shenira kemachria es divarav. Right? It sounds like you had a choice. I could have said like this guy. I could have said like my father. I'm choosing like my father. Wait a second. You don't have a choice. Al im yesh lo tshuva lahashiv al divrei achol kemeshiv. If he has something to say, which is a disproof of the other people, so then talk to them. Don't say that I agree with my father. Just disagree with them. Talk to them about why they're wrong. But don't say the words, I take my father's side, because that implies that there's another side to take. Interesting chiddush. The Efshar, says the Kesef Mishnah, Efshar, Sharashi, Shekasav, Lo Yomar, when he says, don't say, Nirin Divrei Ploni, don't say that I agree with so-and-so. Al ezamehem shayomar in the skavin shafil kshayomar shenir and divrei aviv nirik machri ezavar. Maybe even Rashi means that when he says, I agree with Ploni. Ploni could be your father too. It's an interesting read of Rashi. But, says the Kesef Mishnah in source number 6, if you remember, the Rambam had added a category, which I said was implied by a Gemara. The Rambam added a category of not saying your parents' name. Says the Kesef Mishnah, tzarchiyun. This requires some investigation. Mehechan motzo. Whoever saw such a thing? Where did the Rambam get this from? V'chol halashon ad ein bekach klum nistapakti bo v'he'erosi alav v'perikei mehechos tamator. I couldn't find the halacha. Says the Mishnah, I don't know where he got this from. There's no such halacha. This whole thing, he says, from the words haya shem aviv until en bekach klum, which is all the way before Ezu Kavod, right? By the end of the name calling piece, he says, I don't know about this one. Nistapakti bezeh. I have doubts about this one. He says, there's no where the Rambam got all this halacha from. It'd be interesting to see other mefarshim about how they justify it. But what I do want to talk about is how you find in these different sources is that there's discussion how to define any one of these behaviors. Each one of these activities, you know, lo omid b'mkomo, lo yoshev b'mkomo, lo soser es devarav, v'lo machrio, all of those have different definitions. And it's not necessarily clear what fits into these activities. So even though the Rambam himself sounds like he has an expanded definition of kibud avaim by the fact that he says, Mishamsho Bashar Dvarim, which includes everything else, even by Mora Avaim, it could be that while the list is specific, the definitions of them aren't. And therefore, there would seem to be, at the very least, an expanded definition for the first category, too. even if it were the case that there are specifics, that you can make a generality in some sense in the fact that these all have different definitions. Does machrio mean to disagree with your father? Does it mean to agree and give off the impression of disagreeing? You can note, you can only imagine the different nafkaminas between those two opinions. Even siding with your father is a problem. Lo yoshe bimkomo. Is lo yoshe bimkomo specifically in a place which is going to denigrate his status? Or is it even anything that's exclusive to your father, you're not allowed to use? Maybe you'd extend that to a cup that he uses. Maybe you'd extend that to clothing that he uses. Maybe you'd extend that to the books that he reads. If that's your father's thing, you're not allowed to use it. That would only be according to the opinion that lo yoshe bimkomo is referring to anything that's exclusive to your father. If, however, you understand lo yoshe bimkomo, like Rashi says, to be interpreted as a status symbol, that this is the goblet of the, you know, whatever, you know, this is the royal clothing. So then that's when it would be disrespectful to use your father's clothing. But for anything else, if it's a regular thing, so maybe it's not. So you see, within each of these categories, within each of these specifics, I should say, you can interpret it one way or the other. And therefore, it's not good enough. It's not definitive enough to say that category number one is some kind of pegam in his kavod, or some kind of denigration of his status, because according to some, lo yoshe bimkomo is not a status-oriented statement, right? It's anything that has to do with your father. That's your father's thing. Don't touch your father's stuff, right? So when it comes to defining these two categories, we have to have a much more expanded definition of them. It can't be just about status. Whereas when it comes to the second category, at least according to the Rambam, it seems like a pretty expansive category, expansive definition. It has anything to do with a tangible benefit that you provide for your parent. But the first category is a little more specific. And according to the Rambam, it sounds like it's very specific, in that he quotes a very specific thing in order to include it within his list. But as we've seen, and as we just mentioned, maybe the definitions are expansive also, and it's not so clear-cut what's included in what. Is this only at home? Sarita says, is this only at home? If you share a business with your father, you surely might disagree. That is a great question. There are other Mefarshim that talk about Lo Soser Tevarev in terms of Halacha versus Dibri Chulin. Some opinions say that it's referring only to halacha. Some opinions say it's only Dibri Chulin, meaning it's not halacha. Halacha, you got to get it right, right? We talked about that last week. When you share business with your father, there are definitely some touchy subjects in there, some touchy halachas that you'd have to ask Shilas about. And again, it's not necessarily the case that you're not allowed to disagree with him. It's just the way that you disagree with him. If it's in front of him, if it's in public, if it's in private, if it's done in a respectful way, there are ways to talk to your parents in a way that's not always in agreement. But when this Gemara says Lo Soser Tevarev, it might be specific to talking in a certain environment, to talking in a specific way. So it's not necessarily the case that you can never disagree. But surely, in a business atmosphere, you have to be very careful and know the halachas very well about how to speak to your father, how to speak to a parent in that environment. Okay, so Mirza Hashem, so next week. Yeah,
Adina. So if a father says to you, you can sit in my chair, I have no problem with that. Is that the same as, you know, go against halacha, or is...
Good, that's a good question. Well, so that's an interesting nuance that you're pointing out, which is that when we say a parent's not allowed to tell you to go against halacha, it's talking about an independent halacha from Kibud Avim, right? It's not saying... you're asking a good question, which is, well, if everything's included in Kibud Avim, so then you can never do anything against them, because it will always be against the Kibud Avim. No, so when it comes to Kibud Avim, the parent can define Kibud Avim, right? They get to define what the activity is when it's within their own personal benefit. If it's something which is external, which they don't decide, like Shabbos, like, you know, any other halacha, so then that's not up to them. They can't be mochel for that. But there's an interesting question. Can you be mochel? Can a parent be mochel? And we pass on that a parent can be mochel. A parent can forgive the child, preemptively say that it's okay for you to sit in my chair. That is the halacha. That's different from a Rebbe, and that's different from a king. Those people are more representative of Hashem himself. even though we've seen before that if it, and this is one of the nafkaminas we didn't mention about the difference between kibud avim being ben adam l'chavero versus being ben adam l'makom. If the parent is really in place or a representative of Hashem, so then how could a parent ever be mochel on his kavod? How could a parent ever say, yeah, no, it's okay, you can sit in my seat. You can sit in my seat, that's Hashem's seat. You can't be saying that for Hashem, right? So that's another one that as people point out. But even then, some of the Achron, I think Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg talks about this also, even within Ben Amal Amakom, you can still understand it, that they can be mochel. It gets a little complicated. Yes, Sarita?
You have an obligation to mediate between your parents if they have a disagreement.
Okay, so maybe we're going to do this next week. Maybe we're going to talk about the Gemara, which distinguishes between the parents of the father and the mother. If your parents both ask you to do something, who do you listen to first? Does it make a difference if they're married, if they're divorced, if one's no longer alive? Interesting situations there. We'll go through some of the sources. There is what to say. So if your parents are disagreeing, so again, the caveat to all of this is, that's not to say that you can't talk to them and say what needs to be said. But it's also about the way that you say it, which is important in terms of kibud av v'aim. Do you have to side with one of them when it comes to them disagreeing? That week, I'll hold off until we see the sources next week, and maybe we can reflect on that a little bit more.
I keep thinking of like Tevye and the fiddle on the roof, and you say, when you're saying the hand, and then on the other hand,
I only have two hands, yeah.
And there's another option.
They gave each other a pledge.
Yeah.
Unthinkable. Okay. Shkayach, everyone. Mirz Hashem. We'll continue next week. I'll hope to see everyone tomorrow morning, if you can.
Yes.
Thank you.
Everyone should have a good night and a good holiday weekend, whatever that means for you.
Thank you.
Okay, enjoy.
It's about turkey, so...
Yeah. Shasali called turkey.
Hmm.
Good one. All right. All the best. Bye-bye.